morning. My name is Ginger Abraham, and it's my pleasure to welcome you today to the Unitarian Universalist Fellowship. In the name of compassion and loving kindness, we open our hearts to accept all kinds of people. For those who seek, our hearts have become church, temple, synagogue, mosque, sanctuary. For those who are hurting, we reach out to share your pain. For minorities or the forgotten, wherever you may come from, we welcome you here. We, the Unitarian Universalist Fellowship of Charlotte County, believe in the religion of love, which prioritizes no color, no language, no nationality. We honor the truth in all personal stories. Our religion is about love and inclusion. It is good that we gather together today. Our opening words this morning are from Leslie Takahashi. Here in this place of peace, may we find hope. Here in this place of connection, may we find life-giving community. Here in this place of rest, let the unrest of our hearts turn us toward justice. Here in this space made sacred by memories of connection, let us each feel ourselves part of the new that grows from the old in the spiraling unity of years.
Saint and sin. Two words you might not hear too often from the pulpit in a Unitarian Universalist Fellowship, but they're important words for us to talk about. They're alive in the fabric of our world around us. Some of us grew up in traditions where these words were used, and they remain important to us, possibly even central to our theology. They might even serve to offer comfort and direction. Others may have been harmed by the use of these words. And some of us may wonder how to consider these words in a Unitarian Universalist context. Now, saints, in my mind, is pretty straightforward. Saints are people who are formally recognized by a denomination as being exemplary or holy. And as a young girl, I remember a Catholic priest telling me that in order to be recognized as a saint, in addition to having an extraordinary life and often a painful death, there had to be a certain number of miracles associated with people praying to you. So that's a pretty high bar for sainthood in some traditions. Now, as Unitarian Universalists, we don't have a creed or a statement of belief that binds us together. What we have is a covenant. We are a covenantal faith, so we make agreements and decide how we want to be together. And that covenant is a living thing. It continues to expand as we do. It continues to expand as new information comes into our experience. And some of us may remember that a few weeks back, we sang the song that's printed in the hymnals as standing on the side of love, as answering the call to love. Because Jason Shelton, Reverend Jason Shelton, who wrote the song, came to realize that standing on the side of love was ableist language. But answering the call to love, is something that we're invited to do as Unitarian Universalists, each and every one of us, and it is in our capacity. And we agree to be good to each other, to honor each other's inherent worth and dignity. So by changing the song to answering the call to love, Jason was weaving a new thread into our covenant. And every time we sing it, we're agreeing how we want to be together. Also, what this means, being a non-creedal faith, is that we don't have a denomination or someone at the head of our denomination that tells us who our saints can be. We get to decide that for ourselves. But if I had to choose what I think most people might say, I would choose Thomas Jefferson, Miguel Serveto, also known as Michael Servetus, and Benjamin Rush. Now, Miguel Serveto lived during the Protestant Reformation in the 16th century and was one of the first to espouse a Unitarian theology, and he was burned at the stake. for refusing to recant his stance. United States of America forefathers Benjamin Rush and Thomas Jefferson didn't face a dramatic end like Cilreto. They died rather uneventful and normal deaths, but their good deeds are something that are exemplary and long-lasting. For instance, Benjamin Rush was a universalist. He was one of the first physicians to fight for the rights of the mentally ill. He was also instrumental in raising the funds to start the very first African Methodist Episcopal Church in Philadelphia. Ben Franklin was in on that action, too, in fundraising. Thomas Jefferson was extraordinary. I mean, what didn't this guy do, right? He created a Bible. He wrote the Virginia Religious Freedom Statute. He was a vice president. He was a president. Created a Bible. He was a busy guy. And the works of these three men are notable, and their words and good deeds are impressive. They continue to inspire people today. However, comma, all three of the saints I just mentioned are also sinners. Now, I was preparing my sermon last night and running through it while listening to Hamilton. The Broadway musical Hamilton, the documentary. It's on PBS if you want to check out the documentary that talks all about it. And one of the things that Hamilton's chief creator, Lynn Miguel Miranda, says is that our forefathers are deeply flawed human beings. Deeply flawed. Just like the rest of us. Deeply flawed. Now, the word sin, translated from Greek, which is spelled S-Y-N, means literally to miss the mark. That's really what it means, to miss the mark. Now, the way the word sin is used is to describe any transgression that separates a person from God or anything that is outside of what is deemed godly behavior by some type of theological lens or practice of religion. And what I find interesting is that because it's related to a theological lens, it's something that can change over time. Sin has a different meaning in each generation and across different theologies, across different theological understandings. So we know this intimately, that some Christian churches, including our own, once thought that it was a sin for people of the same sex to love each other. But over time, denominations like the United Church of Christ held a different position that was rooted in a reinterpreting of biblical language and theology. So looking at scripture and saying, hey, hold on a second. There's room for love here. And they went back to the scriptures for that evidence. And then Unitarians and Universalists came along to that understanding and took the position of love. Though, as the Unitarian side of our denomination looks more to reason and experience over scripture. But our Universalist ancestors said, hold up, God is love. Everyone is loved in God's eyes, and everyone is saved by virtue of being. If you are breathing, you are saved. That's the good news of Universalism. Furthermore, for Unitarians and Universalists, there isn't an intermediary needed to absolve a person of perceived sins. So what I mean by that is you don't have to come to me and ask for forgiveness. You don't have to come to Rev. Amy and ask for forgiveness for a perceived sin. Now, you can come to us if something is weighing on your heart and you want to work through it. We are going to be there to hold space for you, to believe in you, to know that you are loved and perfect as you are. But absolution and forgiveness, that's an inside deal. Forgiveness and restoration of our beings or souls, it comes through work in this life. from our deeds, from our own hearts, and from the hearts of those who choose to forgive us. Now, the types of sins that we commit in everyday life, they can vary in impact. Now, some people consider Serveto a sinner, because after he dropped into this bubbling cauldron that was the Protestant Reformation, this gigantic stone, can you just imagine a bubbling cauldron and this gigantic stone that plops in and hot water goes everywhere? That's what Serveto did. And then you know what he did next? He went into hiding. He took up a new identity. Yeah, and he had to lie over and over and over again to people about who he was. Some people might consider that a sin. Now, Rev. Amy spoke last week a little bit about Thomas Jefferson, and I want to say that there's more to his story. In addition to being a slaveholder, David Walker, who was a contemporary of Jefferson, he was an African-American author. And Google him, please, and read Walker's appeal, because it will shed a light on that time period like you have never seen before. He accuses Jefferson as calling African Americans unfortunate and inferior. Jefferson's words contributed to the subjugation of African Americans, and that impact is a lasting one. Benjamin Rush presented a research paper to the American Philosophical Society, and brace yourselves, because this is horrific. His argument was that the color and figure of blacks came from a form of leprosy, and he posited that blacks could therefore be cured and become white. These are the people that founded our country. This implicit bias is alive in our system and in our culture. This is why there is a disproportionate number of young black men in prison. So hold on to that. So what can we learn from these saintly sinners? Author and speaker, Dr. Carolyn Miss, was giving a workshop many years ago, and she asked everyone who was present to raise their hand if they were in that particular workshop to get over someone who'd hurt them. And just think about that. I mean, do you maybe come here to get over some of the hurts that might have been caused, or do you go somewhere else to a coaching workshop or listen to self-help books or tapes to get over someone? Almost everyone in the audience raised their hand. There's so much truth to that statement, because we all do good works, but we also transgress against ourselves, breaking from our own integrity, and maybe some larger transgressions or other transgressions. All of our actions, every single one of them has an impact. Sometimes that impact has a greater effect than others. But our religious tradition calls us to remember that love abides. Love abides. And Carolyn Mace also said that, I promise you that as many of you are gathered here today, there's 3 times more people out there in the world in places just like this trying to get over you. But it's hard to live into this idea of abiding love and being saved or restored through our deeds, through being in good relationship, in right relationship. And I'll tell you a story. When I was in middle school, my friend Danielle was killed while crossing the street. And Danielle had a really rough life. She had a hard childhood. She had just gotten into a place where she was in a supportive environment. She was starting to make changes. Things were going well. And a driver that was impaired by alcohol hit her on the street at 9 o'clock in the morning. And I'll tell you, my life changed dramatically at that moment when I found out about her death. And it changed in two ways. First, I swore never to tolerate someone drinking and driving, and I promised I'd never do so myself. And secondly, I had my first run-in with a feeling of soul-burning anger directed at a human being, and I didn't think I would ever forgive that person.
Welcome to the club.
That anger is real. That hurt is real. And Mary Morrissey, she's a mentor of mine. Some of you may know her. She's a Unity minister. She taught me everything that I know about forgiveness. And she breaks up the word forgive into two separate words, for and give. And she says forgiveness is when we give one perception for another. Now, we don't rewrite the past. We don't forget the past. We don't invite people who might be dangerous or harmful into our current experience. But we can open our hearts little by little. This is a process, little by little, opening our hearts to a new understanding of compassion and forgiveness, knowing that we are all humans. And we are deeply flawed and perfect in our flaws. Mary told me a story once about a man who came to her office for counseling back when she was a therapist. And this man was deeply angry. I mean, he was yelling at people at work. He was starting to get out of control. And his anger stemmed from his best friend running off with his wife. And there were financial implications as well, because I think this man was also his business partner. And the, you know, so he lost all of his partners like in a day, and his whole life was completely upended. And so Mary suggested that he begin a spiritual practice of forgiveness, and he was furious, stormed out of her office. Week later, he came back because his life hadn't improved any, and he said, I'll give this forgiveness thing a shot. So Mary gave him an exercise to try at home. And we're going to do something together that's rooted in our Unitarian Universalist tradition later on that's different from what Mary gave him to do. What he did within his tradition, he used prayer as a tool. And so the man began to pray for his ex-business partner. A week later, he comes back to Mary's office and said, well, this is what my prayer was this week. I prayed that a big, giant garbage truck didn't run him over and kill him. Because nobody should go like that. And Mary congratulated him because it was a start. Right? It was somewhere to start. It's not all pixie dust and roses and Disney endings. This work of forgiveness. It's a spiritual practice. So a week later, he comes back in again, and he just prayed that his ex-best friend didn't get really sick. And on the prayers went, week after week, changing form until one day, the man came in and said, well, I was stopped at the light this week, and up rolls my old friend in a brand new BMW. And I looked at him, and I thought, good. I hope he's doing well. And I turned back and the light turned green and I think he hit the brakes because he realized he was free. He was free from those feelings of anger and resentment. He wasn't going to call them up and invite them for dinner. But they no longer had a hold on his heart. They no longer had his body chained to a certain place in life. The man did move on. He met someone and had children. As for me, I forgave the person that was driving the car that ended Danielle's life many years ago. I don't know what was happening in that person's life. that put them behind the wheel that day. I don't know what their private pain was, and I don't know the hell they live with every single day, knowing that they ended a young teenager's life. I don't know any of that. All I know is that they're a human being, and they suffer, and they bleed, just like me. The impact of that person's decision did still change me irrevocably. But when I let go of that soul-burning anger, I found room for compassion and for something new to come through. I became a trainer a few years ago for MAD, Mothers Against Drunk Driving, and I'm able to give workshops and lectures to educate parents on how to talk to their youth about alcohol, drugs, and driving under the influence. I can't do anything about the past, but I do like to help empower people and future generations so that maybe there can be different outcomes. And you might be thinking, it's got to be easy for me to forgive because I'm not Daniel's parents. And as a parent myself, I can't think of anything more devastating than losing a child. And I don't know, in my experience, how a parent could forgive someone who is responsible for the loss of their child's life. So I turned instead to two parents who did just that. The parents of Amy Beale. Amy Beale was an anti-apartheid activist in South Africa. Amy was driving some day with some fellow activists while they were doing mission work, and when they were on the road, a few young black men who were enraged by the circumstances of their oppression threw rocks at her car. Amy and everyone in the vehicle died as a result. Amy's parents were devastated by the loss, but they didn't want Amy's death to be in vain. They understood that there was more happening here. So they started a foundation in her name, and they quit their jobs, and they went down to South Africa to do work. And during the Truth and Reconciliation talks that were started by Nelson Mandela, they fought for the release of those young men. Two of the men work for the foundation that bears Amy's name. Amy's parents didn't just forgive them. They consider them to be like adopted sons. And if you Google Amy Beale, you can learn more about her parents and her foundation. There are several news articles. There's interviews with her parents. There's interviews with the two men that now work in the organization. And I will be honest with you, when I am having a moment where I think something has happened that is unforgivable, I go back through and read Amy's story. And it reminds me that while that depth of forgiveness may be out of my personal experience, it is possible. It is humanly possible because there are humans that did it. We might all be saints. Saints in the eyes of some and sinners in the eyes of others. But regardless of the status we hold or have held, forgiveness is possible for us. And it's possible for those that we need to forgive so that we might be free. Forgiveness is a necessary part of leading a fuller, freer life. And if anyone likes Brené Brown, Brené Brown is a researcher. She researches things like shame and fear and guilt. She has some great TED Talks out there, and she talks about how to live a wholehearted life, and forgiveness is a key component in living wholeheartedly. And I'd like to invite you to begin this journey of forgiveness today. There are note cards underneath everyone's chair, and there are pencils, just in case you forgot one. There are pencils or pens, a couple to each row. And the invitation I'm issuing to you is to write the name of someone you'd like to forgive on one side. So someone you'd like to forgive. And on the other side, write the name of someone you'd like to forgive you. And we're going to do this owl style. So anyone who's taken Our Whole Lives, which is a full life sexuality program that begins in preschool and it goes all the way through adulthood. When we do exercises like this, everyone writes on the note card. You can write placeholder if you don't want to put a name there. You can just write placeholder. We do this as an act of solidarity. So I invite you to write placeholder. And no one will see your card. This is only for you. I've got a sticky note up here with mine. And after you've written the names, I invite you to pull out the insert located in your order of service. And it's called the Litany of Atonement. And Ginger and I will guide you through the Litany of Atonement with the congregation reading the italicized words. And we'll begin the Litany of Atonement. For remaining silent when a single voice would have made a difference. I forgive myself and I forgive you. We begin again in love.
For each time that our fears have made us rigid and inaccessible.
I forgive myself and I forgive you. We begin again in love. For each time that we've struck out in anger without just cause.
I forgive myself. And I forgive you. We begin again in love.
For each time that our greed has blinded us to the needs of others.
I forgive myself. And I forgive you. We begin again in love. For the selfishness which sets us apart and alone.
I forgive myself. And I forgive you. We begin again in love.
For falling short of the admonitions of the Spirit.
I forgive myself, and I forgive you. We begin again in love. For losing sight of our unity.
I forgive myself, and I forgive you. We begin again in love.
For these and for so many acts, both evident and subtle, which have fueled the illusion of separateness.
I forgive myself. And I forgive you. We begin again in love. I invite you to keep this litany with you and read the words daily. Maybe hold on to the note card as you do so.
Try the practice.
May all of your hearts be free. May you all know forgiveness. May you all know peace. And may you all know that you can come to Rev. Amy or I or someone on the pastoral care team if you would like to speak more deeply. Amen, and blessed be.
Our closing words today are adapted from words by Lisa Friedman. We touch the floor to remember that wherever we bring our best self is holy ground. We reach for the sky to remember that we are a part of a mystery much bigger than ourselves. We hold hands to remember that we need one another and are a part of one family. We join voices in saying, blessed be, to remember that we each have a gift to offer the world and to use in making the world a better place. Go in peace. We're going to extinguish the chalice, but not the light of hope until we meet again. Please join in singing the hymn, Go Lift It Up. The words are printed in your order of service. It's also on number 1057 in the teal book.
Thank you.
Remember to turn your cell phones back on, folks.
Enjoy coffee hour.